arrogant SOB. Judd's so sure of himself, he's just riding right up the road to the gate. We're tearing the gate down.
Smoke quickly shifted positions and sighted a man who was under the hunter's moon that illuminated the night sky. Gunfire from the house and bunkhouse emptied half a dozen more saddles.
They were ready for us! The hell with this!
Smoke fired again and saw a man jerk in the saddle. The attackers rode off, heading back for the friendlier range of the Bar V. They left their dead and wounded behind them. Smoke and the others waited a reasonable length of time to see if it was a trick, and then slowly and cautiously gathered in the yard. Smoke and Cheyenne roamed about, checking on the men sprawled on the ground. They found several alive.
Hey, what do we do with them?
Patch them up and get word to Judd to come and get them. Maybe pile them in a wagon and send them back to Judd. We'll see.
Smoke knelt down beside a man who was alive, but not for long. He had been shot in the center of the chest.
Hey, he'll never quit, Jensen. Leo's a crazy man. As long as he's got a dime in his dungarees, he'll hire a fighting man.
Why?
King. To be king. Wants to control everything from the state line to Preston. Everything and everybody.
Shut your trap, Slim. You got paid to ride for the brand.
You go to hell, Lassiter. Vale's got gun hands coming in on the train. This is shaping up to be the biggest range war in the state. He'll overpower you just by numbers, Jensen. And he's just about reached the point where he don't give a damn if the kids get hurt.
Smoke rose to his boots and took the blanket that Doreen handed him, spreading it over the dead gunfighter. Cheyenne had taken all the guns and ammo from the dead and wounded men. They would be added to the arsenal of the Box A. Smoke felt sure they would be needed before all this was over. He knelt down beside Lassiter. The man had a bullet burn on the side of his head and a slight shoulder wound. Painful, but not serious.
I ought to call the U.S. Marshals in here and file charges against all of you, Lassiter. But that would take weeks, and we'd have to keep you prisoner and look at your ugly face every day. It just isn't worth it.
You better kill me, Jensen. Davidson was a friend of mine.
You should choose your friends more carefully, Lassiter. No, I'm not going to kill you. Not like this, anyway. Not yet.
And you're a damn fool, Jensen.
At least I don't make war against kids and women and old people.
Who gives a damn what happens to a bunch of snot-nosed brats? Back away, Smoke. Let me finish him. It's going to happen sooner or later.
Doreen stood looking at it all through wide and scared eyes. Smoke had no doubts about the old mountain man's ability to do just what he had suggested. But he couldn't allow the wounded man to be killed that way. He rose to his feet.
Get him patched up, Doreen. We'll put him in a wagon.
Smoke walked over to where a young man lay, gut shot. The young gunfighter, no more than a couple of years out of boyhood, lay with both hands clutching his belly. The blood seeped darkly through his fingers, glistening wetly under the light of the hunter's moon.
You got a mama you want me to write, boy?
They throwed me out of the house a long time ago. I wasn't about to spend the rest of my life slopping hogs and milking cows.
Beats what you got now. How much was Judd Vale paying you, boy?
$100 a month. And found.
Maybe you can buy something in hell.
They'll kill you, Jensen. This is one fight you ain't gonna win. Your reputation ain't gonna help you none this time around. Judd Vale's better than you. His real name is...
Shut your mouth, you bastard!
Lassiter's admonition fell on deaf ears. The young gunny's eyes rolled back in his head, and his soul went winging to a fiery, smoky eternity.
How long has Judd been in this area, Walt?
About 25 years. He just appeared one day with that damn Jason fellow.
He doesn't look that old to me.
Yeah, he's older than he looks, but he's one hell of a man still. Don't sell him short, none. I'd peg him in his late 40s. Might be 50 even. Hard to tell with a man like that.
You got no idea where he came from?
No. No, not a clue.
He come up here by way of Texas, but I doubt he was Texas born. I remember when he got here. Like all them hands of his, I think he's running from the law somewheres.
And you would guess?
Back east. But that's just a guess. It'd be hard to read his back trail after all these years.
What's the count on those still alive, Cheyenne?
They're 4 dead and 3 wounded. None of them hurt too bad.
Can one of them drive a wagon?
Oh, yeah.
Let's hitch up a team and get them on their way. We'll pile the dead in with them.
Good. Beats the hell out of digging a hole.
Walt, Smoke, and Cheyenne took turns standing guard that night. But as it turned out, they could all have slept soundly, for Jud Vale and his so-called fighting men had had quite enough of the Box A for that go-round.
Walt, this battle is just getting started. Now I'm afraid that some of the kids are going to get hurt.
I don't think even Jud Vale would do that. Not deliberately. One of those kids gets hurt, the whole area would turn against him. And he knows it. But they might catch a bullet that was meant for one of us.
The kids desperately need the money for their families. I think what I'll do is ride around the area and speak to the mothers and fathers about it. Lay it on the line. With most of the herd gone, we could do without the younger ones. Whatever the parents say, that's it.
Smoke began seeking out and questioning the parents early the next morning, riding first to young Chucky's house, if that's what that shack could be called. It wasn't that his parents were rawhiders. They were just having a tough time getting the farm operation going, with Jud Vale and his men no small part of that struggle.
Well, it would really be a blow to Chucky's pride if you was to send him home, Mr. Smoke. The boy is right proud of being able to bring in some money this summer. We'll leave it up to him.
Smoke rode over to the parents of Matthew, the frail boy with the thick glasses, next. He got the same message as before. The parents were not unconcerned about their children. It was simply that this was still the raw frontier, and one grew up and pulled his or her own weight from the get-go. It was called survival. Smoke spent that day and most of another day talking with the parents of the boys. The message he got, albeit worded differently, came out to mean the same thing. It was up to the boys whether to stay or leave. Smoke drifted on over to the railhead, arriving there about the same time as the herd. He watched through hard, chilly eyes as the passenger car spewed forth a dozen or more booted, spurred, and two-gunned men. Smoke didn't need a telegraph wire to tell him that these were the men the kid had told him about before he died in the front yard of the Box A spread. Jud Vale was going for the brass ring this time. Smoke watched as Gimpy Bonner limped off the train and made his way back to the horse cars. Gimpy was deadly quick and had no backup in him. He had a horse shot out from under him years back, and the horse rolled on his leg, breaking it in several places, leaving him with a permanent limp. Shorty DePaul, all 5 feet 5 inches of him, followed Gimpy. Short he might be, those guns of his and his ability to use them made him as tall as the next man. The editor of the Montpelier newspaper had walked over to stand by Smoke's side and watch the gunfighters leave the train.
Who's that one?
Scott Johnson, from down Arizona way. That stocky fellow with him is called Yates. Right behind them is DeGrazia, and Jake Hugh. They work as a team. They'll shoot you front or back. Doesn't make any difference to them.
Looks like Jud Vale is pulling out all the stops, doesn't it?
For a fact.
Smoke watched two gunfighters named Beckett and Pike step out of the car. Jaeger, a German immigrant turned gunfighter, stepped down right behind him. Molino was right behind him. Smoke ticked the names off to the editor. Chato de Peso, the much feared and very dangerous New Mexico bounty hunter, stepped down, hitching at his gun belt as he walked. There were several young punks with fancy guns and silver-adorned gun belts tagging with the better-known gunnies. Smoke counted them out as two-bit never-would-bes with no sand in them.
I think I shall inform the governor of this gathering of trash.
Go ahead. It won't do any good.
Why?
There isn't a man among them who is wanted for anything that I know of. And there's no law against hiring tough men to work for you.
There's gonna be a bloodbath around the bear, Mr. Jensen.
Yeah. and the only way I know to avoid it is for Walt and Alice Burton to turn tail and run. Just give up their holdings to a madman and leave the country. Would you want to see them do that, Mr. Argood?
No, I would not. Is there a joker in this deck, Smoke?
Yeah, and his name's Clint Perkins. He's an unknown. Have you ever seen him?
No, few people have over the years. Or at least, if they have, they aren't talking. But I can tell you that many still look upon him as some sort of Robin Hood.
But you don't.
He's no better than a common outlaw. And personally, from what I know about him, I think he's insane.
Is he headquartered in this area?
No one knows. He's a mystery man, and a master of disguises. You think he'll show up here?
I think so. This is just too good for him to miss. I think there's a lot of hate in the man, all bottled up and ready to explode. When it does, it's gonna get very interesting.
Smoke took the bank draft from the cattle buyer and tucked it safely away in a money belt around his waist. He had a letter from Walt giving him the authority to endorse the draft and deposit it in the bank over in Malad City, a wild, rip-roaring town with a history of murder, lynchings, and stage holdups. But the Overland Stage Company, whose run stopped at Malad City, had a good record of foiling holdups, so Walt's money would be reasonably safe after being deposited. Smoke told Doolittle and Harrison to keep the boys close until he got back. He crossed the Bear and headed for the wide-open town of Malad City. The town was named by French trappers, who after becoming sick from gorging on beaver meat, named the town Malad, thinking the area unhealthy. Smoke had a hunch that with the news of Judd Vale's hiring of gun hands now so widespread, Malad City would be crawling with guns for hire, stopping for liquid refreshments and fleeing with the hurdy-gurdy girls as they made their way to the Bar V. And he also wondered if the ante on his head had been upped past the $5,000 mark yet. Wouldn't surprise him a bit. If Judd Vale could get his hands on the box, he would then have the largest spread in the state and would certainly be a powerful man, a man to reckon with. Smoke stayed with the main road leading to Malad City, and a sorry road it was. He met several groups of men riding in twos and threes, all looking like hard cases and all heading east. They either didn't recognize him or didn't want to brace him with such short backup. Since he'd been late getting away from the railhead, Smoke made camp just to the south of Oxford Peak, the snow-capped mountain thrusting up more than a mile and a half into the air. He was boiling his coffee and frying his bacon when he heard a rider approaching his camp from out of the fast-falling dusk, the rider coming up from the north.
Hello, the fire! I'm friendly!
Then come on in and light and sit. Coffee's almost fit to drink.
Smoke saw the young man's hair sticking out from under his hat before he saw anything else. Flame red. He bet he knew what that young rider was called. The man's outfit was old, but well cared for, and Smoke liked the way the young rider saw to his horse's needs before he took care of his own. He carefully rubbed the animal down with handfuls of grass and saw that it was watered and picketed on good graze. Smoke also noticed that the redhead's gun was tied down, which might not mean anything, or it might mean everything. As he approached the fire, tin cup and plate in his left hand, his grin was genuine, and his handshake was firm and quick.
Oh, sure, I am glad to see a friendly face. Most of the hombres I've been seeing the past couple of days all look like they could eat a porcupine and not feel the quills.
Smoke filled his coffee cup without comment.
My folks dub me Clarence. Nobody calls me that. Just Rusty.
I figured right at first glance.
Smoke speared some bacon out of the pan and handed a hunk of bread to Rusty.
Much obliged.
Rusty let his eyes drift over Smoke's rig, noting the two guns, one butt forward.
You riding east like all them others?
Nah, west for a day. Then I'll do a turnaround back to the Bear. Any work over yonder?
I'm looking for hands.
You sure found one. My poke's as flat as a sat-on pancake.
Might be dangerous signing on with me.
Well, what kind of work you got in mind?
Punching cows, fixing fence, cleaning out water holes, cowboy work. You up to it?
Sure. It's what I've been doing since I was big enough to sit on a saddle. What's the danger you're talking about?
Big rancher who is about half nuts is trying to run the old man and woman who own the spread off their land. They hit us the other night. We emptied 7 saddles.
Well, how many is us?
You talking about hands?
Yep.
3 men who are about 70 and a handful of kids, average age 12.
Are you serious?
As a crutch.
What are you paying?
$100 a month and found.
$100 a month? Shoot, man, you just hired yourself a hand.
Those are fighting wages, Rusty.
I kind of figured they was. But I gotta tell you, I ain't never hired out my gun.
Can you use it?
Oh, yeah, I reckon I'm as good as the next man. I've drug iron a time or two.
Any family?
Ma and Pa died years back. I got some cousins somewhere that I ain't never seen.
Just curious. I want to know who to notify if you catch one.
Just plant me where I fall, I reckon. Make sure my horse is taken care of. He's a good one.
I'm heading over to my lad's city. Then we'll head back to the Box A.
Sounds good to me. You got a name?
Doesn't everyone?
Are you ashamed of your handle?
No.
You a gunfighter?
Some say I am.
Yeah, you look familiar to me. I've seen you somewheres before. On a wanted poster, maybe?
No, I'm not wanted. I own a ranch down Colorado way. The Sugarloaf. I'm just helping out an old couple. I don't like to see folks shoved around.
Oh, that's right nice of you. Kind of get riled up some myself when somebody tries to roll over other folks. Are you going to tell me your name?
I tell you my name, you might not come to work.
For $100 a month and found? You could tell me your name was Satan and I wouldn't back away.
Well, you just might be riding into a corner of hell at that.
Smoke and Rusty reached Malad City at mid-morning, just as the town was catching its breath after a wild and raucous night. Fact of the matter was, things had been reasonably quiet the previous night. There had only been one killing.
Don't never ask nobody for directions in this place. When they laid out these streets, they just tossed a handful of sticks on the ground for a blueprint and then followed it.
They stabled their horses and Smoke pointed out a cafe.
I'll meet you in there in a few minutes.
All right.
Smoke took care of Walt's bank draft and walked the boardwalk to the cafe. He saw several gun slicks he knew by name and a dozen more who had the hard case brand stamped all over them, and a half dozen punks who were looking for a reputation but more than likely would find a grave first. Smoke Jensen had been elusive for over a decade, surfacing outside of his ranch in Colorado only briefly. Many people knew his name but could not put a face to it unless they had memorized the covers of the many penny dreadfuls, most of which were rarely accurate. He received many a furtive glance as he walked toward the cafe, for danger clung to him. It was an aura that made many strong and brave men step aside until he had passed. Smoke was scarcely into his 30s, just now approaching the prime years of his life, but he was already a living legend, not just west of the Mississippi. Had he elected to cut notches into the handles of his Colts after each kill, he would have gone through half a dozen sets and still not have any handles left. But only 10 horns did that. The good smells of cooking made him realize just how hungry he was. Rusty was already working on his first plate of bacon and eggs and fried potatoes, and the first of several pots of coffee. The redhead pushed out a chair with his boot.
Been several folks wondering who you are. Most I heard just come to the conclusion that you's a lawman of some sort.
Now I've worn a badge a time or two.
What'll it be, hon?
Same as my friend here.
I seen you 2 or 3 years back. You be careful in this town. It's filled up with hired guns, all of them just burning to kill you.
I appreciate that.
The waitress nodded and walked back into the kitchen.
Hey, go on. Seems like everybody knows who you are but me.
The name is Jensen.
Smoke Jensen?
That's it. Now close your mouth before a bug decides to fly in there.
Oh, boy, I sure know how to pick them. I'm beginning to wonder if $100 a month is enough.
And found.
Well, food ain't too tasty with a belly full of lead.
I warned you. You didn't sign a contract. Feel free to ride.
Oh, nah. Hell, I'll stick around. I ain't never ridden with such a highfalutin company before. Might be interested.
I'm not looking for trouble, Rusty. After we eat our meal, I plan on saddling up and riding out.
Uh-huh. That must be why you walk around with them hammer thongs off your guns.
I just believe in being a very cautious man, that's all.
Right. Well, with your name, you damn well better be.
The two men cleaned their plates, Rusty eating two plates of food without apology. Then they finished off another pot of coffee. Not as strong as they liked it, but it would do. The cafe was gradually filling with the lunch crowd, all of the diners giving the two men short and cautious looks as they took their seats. Then four hard cases stepped inside. Bob Garner and Montana Slim were the only two that Smoke recognized. The other two were unknown to him, but Garner and Montana Slim were wide enough to face on a full stomach, or an empty belly for that matter. Slim's eyes widened as they settled on Smoke and recognition set in. Then he grinned, his hands close to the butts of his guns. But the humor, that's what it was, did not reach his killer eyes.
Well, well, well. You done got the hot shot all bottled up, boys. That's a funny looking pup with him.
This dog's got teeth, partner. I ain't been a pup in a long time.
Little puppy dog gone got up on his hind legs, boys. I just might have to find me a stick and whoop his tail back between his legs. What you boys think about that?
I wouldn't try it. You just might find that stick sticking out of a part of you that you didn't figure on.
Several men in the cafe left before the lead they knew was coming started flying. A stray bullet doesn't give a damn who it hits.
You got a fat mouth red on the head.
You wearing a gun?
In here or outside?
It don't make a damn bit of difference to me.
The counterman came up with a sawed-off shotgun pointed right at Slim's belly.
You hard cases ain't gonna shoot up this place. So this is my way of telling you to take your guns and your big mouths and your quarrel out in the street. But I mean like right now.
We'll meet you boys at the south edge of town. That is, if you got the belly for it. We'll be there, watching our backs all the way.
What the hell does that mean, Jensen?
It means, Gardner, that I think you're all a bunch of back-shooting cowards.
Get out of here before I turn loose both these barrels.
The four hired guns and bounty hunters stomped out of the cafe.
How do we handle this? And what's this about them being back-shooters?
They're not back-shooters. I just said that to make sure they wouldn't try it. It's a matter of pride for them now. Some of their own kind would shoot them if they tried to set up an ambush.
They both looked up as the waitress set two thick slices of apple pie on the table before them.
On the house, boys. I ain't never had nobody as famous as Smoke Jensen come in my place before.
The men nodded their thanks and fell to eating the pie, chasing it down with gulps of coffee. Around them, the men were beginning to place wagers on the outcome of the impending gunfight. Most of the bets went to Smoke and the red-headed cowboy with him. Their pie and coffee finished, Smoke and Rusty pushed back their chairs, settled their hats on their heads, and stood up, hitching at their gun belts.
Good luck, boys!
Where'd all the people go?
Word travels fast.
The two men began their lonely walk toward the edge of town. The dog looked up from its midday doze and wagged its tail, its eyes seeming to say, "You leave me alone and I'll do the same for you."
I got a hunch that Slim and Bob will stay together, so we play it like that. I'll take Montana Slim and Bob Garner. You handle the other two. I don't know them. They might be fast as lightning.
I ain't all that fast, but I don't hardly ever miss.
That's the main thing. A lot of so-called fast guns usually put the first bullet into the dirt.
They stayed in the shadows of the buildings until coming to the very edge of town.
There they are, Rusty. I got a hunch they'll want to jaw a little first. Work up some courage. We'll let them. You ready?
As I'll ever be.
The men stepped off into the dirt of the street and began the short walk toward destiny. The hired guns and bounty hunters had positioned themselves by a fallen down old barn, obviously one of the first structures to be built in the town. And it was just as obvious that the men had done so with a plan in mind.
After the first rounds are fired, any left standing are going to die for the protection of that old barn. You hit the ground behind that log pile, and I'll take the back of the building.
What the hell are you two whispering about? You working up some sort of sneaky play?
Neither one of us needs sneaky plays to deal with scum like you.
Damn your hide, Jensen.
All four of the men, Smoke and Rusty faced, were wearing two six guns, low and tied down.
Most men can't use but one gun at a time, and some of them can't use that one very well.
How about you?
Oh, I'm the exception.
There was about 50 feet between them when Smoke halted the parade.
All right, Montana. You made your brags back at the cafe. Now let's see if you got the sand to back it up.
10,000 on your head, Jensen. We live nice on that money.
You have to collect it first, Garner.
10,000? Man, I am chopping in some high cotton. Somebody is sure scared of you.
Smoke didn't reply, nor did his eyes leave Montana Slim. It was as he had thought. Slim and Garner were partners and were staying together. Rusty would have to deal with the two bounty hunters, if that's what they were.
I'm tired of all this jawing, Slim, and I really don't want a killing. Why don't you boys just get on your horses and ride out of here?
And I'm just tired of your mouth, Jensen. Grab iron!
All right, Slim.
Montana felt twin hammer blows slam into his chest as his knees began to buckle. Bob Garner ran into the old barn. Rusty had taken his time and placed his shots well. One bounty hunter was down on his belly, his blood staining the dirt from two bullet holes in his belly, and the other so-called gunfighter was holding up his one good arm in surrender. His other arm, his shooting arm, was broken at the elbow and hanging at a very queer angle. Montana Slim, the veteran and victor of half a hundred gunfights, lifted his hands and looked at him. They were empty. Jensen had been so fast he hadn't even grabbed iron.
Impossible.
Smoke was off and running between the old barn and another building, which looked to be in just as bad a shape as the barn. He quickly reloaded as he ran. A bullet whammed into a corral post, and Smoke dropped to his belly, scooting behind an old watering trough. He caught a glimpse of red and white checkered shirt and snapped off a shot.
Shit!
He didn't hit Garner, but the slug came damn close. Smoke triggered off five more rounds, then holstered that Colt, drawing his left-hand pistol just as Garner ran briefly into view. Smoke dusted him from side to side, spinning the man around and holding him there long enough for Smoke to take careful aim and put another slug into the man's chest. Bob Garner went down and didn't get up. It was over, for this go-round anyway. Smoke reloaded both guns and walked over to Garner. Gunny was lying on his back, very close to death. It was not a pretty sight. Of course, Garner hadn't been very pretty to start off with. Smoke squatted down beside the man.
Anybody you want me to write, Bob?
Best if the wife just don't ever see me again. I ain't been much of a husband or a father.
Any money you got, you want me to send him?
Spent it last night on the hooters.
Now swap your guns for a burying, Bob.
Right kind of you. See you, boys. In hell.
Rusty was quiet as they rode out of Malad City that afternoon. The death of Bob Garner had, at least for the moment, taken the fight out of those remaining in the town. They stood on the boardwalk and watched Smoke and Rusty clear town. Most would continue on toward the Bar V, but there were some, mostly older and wiser, who would elect to seek out another trouble spot where they could ply their deadly trade. It was not that they were cowards, mind you. Far from it. They simply knew Smoke Jensen's reputation and their own capabilities and limitations.
Mean right up to the end.
What are you talking about?
Garner. What makes a man like that, Smoke?
Some folks back east and in the cities are claiming it comes from bad rearing.
Huh. Yeah, I ain't disputing your word, Smoke, but I just don't believe in that at all. I've been on my own for years, and my pa was a mighty mean man. He liked to whoop up on us boys and girls. Didn't make no difference to him. My older sister run off when I was just a little shaver. And my other brother died from a beating Pa gave him. Hell, Pa knocked me unconscious with his fists or a chunk of stove wood more than once. I ain't never stole nothing in my life or rode the Hoot Owl Trail or done nothing that was against the law. Nobody could have had a worser home life than me. So them folks that think what you just said don't know a pot of beans from a pile of cow droppings.
I had to be a man grown just after my 13th birthday. Working a hard scrabble farm back in Missouri. and looking after my sick mother. Wasn't ever enough food, just enough to keep body and soul together. So I know what you mean, Rusty. And no, I don't believe those so-called experts either.
What makes men like Montana Slim and Bob Garner and all the rest be what they are?
I think they were born to it, Rusty. They could have had all the advantages in the world, and they would have turned out bad. A different kind of bad, maybe. But bad, just the same.
What do you mean, a different kind of bad?
Oh, they might have been bankers cheating old ladies, or grocers cheating people, and being mean-spirited folk. That type of thing.
Huh. You know, Smoke, you're right. There sure are a lot of mean-minded and mean-spirited people in this world. Well, I know a few people who was born into money and come from nice parents. Kind parents. Their kids would steal the pennies off in a dead man's eyes.
That's what I mean, Rusty. Born to it. I call it the bad seed theory.
Rusty settled into the bunkhouse with the old men and the kids. Smoke had taken to sleeping in a room out in the barn, and Doreen stopped batting her eyes at Smoke and seemed to be quite taken with Rusty, much to the relief of Smoke. She got to getting all gussied up and swishing around him until it was embarrassing for damn near everybody else within 50 feet of her. But Rusty, he just grinned like an egg-sucking dog and stood around in sort of a daze. There had been no trouble from Judd Vale or his men during the time Smoke had been gone, but gunfighters kept drifting into the area in groups of twos and threes. Pretty soon, Smoke thought, Judd Vale was going to have his own private army, and he was going to have to make his move pretty quick, because he was paying out a lot of money for all his hired guns to sit around and do nothing. While many of the bounty hunters and hired guns could work cattle, Smoke had a hunch that damn few were going to. Most of them were just downright lazy. On a bright, sunshiny morning, Smoke lined the boys up and laid it on the line to them, telling them what their parents had said and leaving the final decision up to the young cowpunchers. The boys huddled together for a time, and then Jamie stepped out of the group and faced Smoke.
I allow as to how we'll stay, Mr. Smoke. We got to have the money to help out at home. And it ain't as if we never faced outlaws and the likes of Judd Vale before, because we all have. I figure it like this, and you tell me if it don't meet with your approval, and we'll work something else out. You see, sir, me and Alan and Cecil and two or three of the others, well, we know more about Judd Vale than you do, we think. We know it won't make no difference to him whether it's a grown man or a boy, not when it comes to standing in his way when he's going after something he wants. Like this ranch and Miss Doreen. So we went against your orders, and each of us stuck a pistol in our saddlebags.
Smoke really couldn't blame the boys. He would have done the same thing had he been in their position. Smoke had been toting a pistol since he was 13, a Navy 36 caliber that had been given to him back in 63 by the as-yet-unknown Confederate guerrilla fighter named Jesse James.
Way we all figure it, Mr. Smoke, it's going to be coming down to the nut-cutting right shortly. And it ain't fair for no one to ask us to ride unarmed when we might catch a bullet at any moment. I reckon that's all I got to say, Mr. Smoke.
All right, Jamie. I fear for your lives, but I can't ask you to disarm yourselves. I've been packing a pistol since I was just a boy. But I have to ask you to show me that you know how to use those guns.
That's fair, sir. When do you want us to do that?
Nothing like right now.
Cheyenne took one group of boys, Rusty took another, and Smoke took the third. But damned if Smoke was going to have 10-year-olds packing pistols. Any boy under the age of 12 would stay close to the house and work in the yard or in the barn or corral. The boys packing iron would be Jamie, Matthew, Ralph, Leroy, Cecil, Alan, Raleigh, Pat, and Oscar. Frail Matthew, thick glasses and all, surprised boy was a born gun hand, the pistol seeming to be a natural extension of his arm. His aim was deadly true. Even Jamie took a back seat to Matthew. Smoke had held the very strong suspicion that Matthew had been secretly practicing his draw and firing for some time.
Yes, sir. Whenever I could scrape up a few pennies to buy ammo, I've been riding out far from the house and working at my draw.
It's a natural talent you have, Matt.
but it's not one your Ma and Pa will look upon with favor. You know that, don't you?
Yes, sir. I reckon that's right, but if a feller's got a knack for something, he ought to polish on it, shouldn't he?
Smoke silently pondered, staring down at the frail boy packing the short-barreled sheriff's model peacemaker.
Yeah, Matt, yeah. Conditions being what they are, I guess you should polish it. As long as there are men like Judd Vale around, and with us being miles from the nearest law, I guess you should. But use that gun wisely, boy. If the law can handle it, let 'em. If you're pushed into a corner, then it's all up to you. I reckon that's the way it's always been, and I suppose that's the way it's always gonna be.
I ain't smart like no grown-up, but that's the way I think, too.
Matt turned, drew, cocked, and fired, all in one smooth, quiet motion, the bullet striking true.
You'll do to ride the river with, Matt.
Smoke walked back to his room in the barn, his thoughts still lingering back over the years, long and bloody years. He'd have to watch Matt and watch him carefully. He looked up as Cheyenne entered the room, his wise old eyes still startled at the speed of the young boy.
Cheyenne, take the boy under your wing, just like Preacher did me. Teach him what Preacher taught me. He's gonna need all the help he can get, I'm thinking.
First time one of them so-called gun slicks of Judd Vale tries to draw down on that boy and gets plugged in the brisket, the boy's gonna be legend. Just like another young man I seem to recall from some years back.
Yeah, I've been recalling it myself. Matthew sure got the speed and the eye, Cheyenne. But I don't think it's God-given. I think it's passed up from hell.
Hey, mayhaps you be right. I've thought the same thing myself more than a time or two. Now then, Jamie ain't real fast, but he's sure enough a good shot. And Leroy is a fine rifle shot. But ain't worth a puma's padiddle with a shotgun. Damn near shot himself in the foot a while ago.
How about the others?
Rusty walked in, hearing the last.
Oh, they'll do, Smoke. They ain't no burning firebrands with shotguns, but they'll generally hit what they aim at. I've been teaching them to take the time and aim, even though the lead might be flying around them.
Good advice. Sometimes hard to follow, though.
Heard that. I've been there myself a time or two.
I've been doing some head figuring whilst you was going, Smoke. Judd's got himself a regular army now. I figure he's got near about 30 gun slicks recent hired on the payroll. That ain't counting his regular hands, which is about 15 on any given day. That comes to about 50 men of Guinness. And that ain't counting the bounty hunters snooping and salivating round the countryside looking for a shot at you.
Yeah, we were lucky the other night. Judd won't be fool enough to try that move again. But it bothers me about the boys carrying guns.
They've had them in their saddlebags all along. And you can bet that whilst they was out of our sight, they was hauling them out and showing them around. Bet, too, that Judd Vale's had snoopers out looking us over through spy glasses and seen them boys with the guns.
Hadn't thought of that, Cheyenne. You're right. Rusty, think you could do a day's work without your mind on Doreen?
Oh, that woman can walk into a room and raise the temperature 15 degrees.
You want me to tell you what to do to cool it off?
No! No, 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 no. I better go see to my horse.
The days began to drift together, each one bringing with it the promise of full summer. And still, Judd Vale made no more moves against the ranch. Smoke couldn't figure out what he was waiting on. But then an idea came to him.
Is Mr. Argood Mormon?
Big time Mormon. Big worker in the church. It's just about time for him to take his annual trip down into Utah. Church meeting of some sort.
That's what I figured.
Figured what?
That's what he's waiting on. For the editor of the paper to be gone. No news would be reported if Argood wasn't around to cover it. And you can bet that Vale will create some incident around Montpelier to keep the young reporter busy while he's striking at the ranch.
Yeah, you may be right. He's sorry, but he's smart.
It's time for another run into the village for supplies. I'll take two of the boys with me. I want to leave as many defenders behind as possible. We'll pull out in the morning.
Leroy drove the wagon, and Smoke and Matthew rode beside the wagon as it bumped and bounced along the narrow, rutted road toward the trading post. Smoke knew he was taking a chance bringing Matt along. but the boy needed some personal things for himself and wanted to buy his ma a present with money he'd earned himself. Smoke had not asked Matthew to stow his pistol in the saddlebags. The gun had become a natural part of the boy, a feeling that Smoke knew only too well.
Matt, I want you to realize that out here, once you strap on a gun, there are those who don't give a damn how young you are. The only thing they're going to see is that hog leg on your hip. And if any of Judd Vale's hired guns are at the post, they're going to taunt you, try to pull you into a fight. And because the West is what it is, they won't interfere unless they gang up on you.
I understand, Mr. Smoke.
Very well.
Smoke breathed a sigh of relief as they approached the post. Only a couple of horses were tied at the hitch rail, and he recognized them as belonging to some area cattlemen. Men whose holdings were so far to the west of Judd Vale's spread that they really had little to fear from the man and his obsession. Well, so far. Smoke felt that they might be able to pick up the supplies and get away safely. At least he hoped so. He wasn't going to put any money on it. Once again, doubts assailed him. Could have ordered Matt to stay behind at the ranch. But the boy had earned his money, and he had a right to spend it. Matt was not a slave to the box, eh? He could come and go as he pleased. Smoke swung down from the saddle and looped the reins around the hitch rail. Matt did the same thing. Out of the corner of his eyes, Smoke watched the boy slip the hammer thong from his pistol. Cheyenne had drilled that into the boy's head.
Leroy, here's the list. You go in the store side and get the supplies.
Yes, sir, Mr. Smoke.
Matt, you stick with Leroy.
Yes, sir.
Boys headed for the partition door to the general store as Smoke walked to the bar.
You again? My stars and garters. I was in the hopes you'd left the country.
Well, sorry. It's me in the flesh. Pull me a cool one.
Did my eyes deceive me, or did I really see that four-eyed kid wearing a gun?
You saw it.
Some of Judd Vale's men is liable to take that thing off of him and spank his butt with it.
I'd hate to be the one who tried.
They might decide to do it in a bunch.
And if that happens, I reckon I'll just have to step in.
Yeah, naturally. And I just had new tables and benches built.
Smoke kept his eyes on the outside as best he could through the dirty, dusty, and fly-specked window. One of two cattlemen in the bar broke the short silence.
Why don't you just ride out of here, Jensen? Judd Vale will settle down if you was to leave.
You really believe that?
That's what he told us.
Smoke noticed that Matt was now sitting quietly on a bench in the front of the store, sipping a bottle of sarsaparilla. Smoke wished the boy had stayed inside the store. He reflected sourly that people in hell probably wished for ice water, too.
Judd Vale's a good, decent man.
He's gonna bring changes to this area. Good changes, progress and all that.
Yeah, and if that little snip Doreen had any sense, she'd grab a hope of the offer Judd's handed her. She could live like a queen in that big mansion of his'n.
She doesn't love him.
Love? Hell's fire, man. What's that got to do with it?
Yeah, love ain't got nothing to do with living well. All a woman's got to do is perform her wifely duties when the lantern's turned down and keep her mouth shut except when she's told to talk. And I'll tell you something else, gunfighter. You best get shut of them snot-nosed squatter brats you hired to work on the box age.
Oh, shit! Shut up, Pearl!
Is that a threat or a warning?
Tain't no threat, gunfighter. Fact is all. Just like that four-eyed little tur rode in with you with a man's iron strapped on. I got a good notion to go out there and take it away from him. You'd stick up for him, wouldn't you?
No. Not as long as it stayed one-on-one. But I'd leave that boy alone if I was you.
Holy shit.
He ain't gonna bother that boy, Jensen. That's just whiskey talk.
Why did he say to get rid of the boys?
I don't know.
Smoke had thought all along that the age of the boys would make no difference to Judd Vale when the man decided to make his move. In a way, he was glad the boys had taken to carrying guns. He walked to the door that opened into the store, looking in. Leroy was still buying supplies. The boy caught his eye.
It's gonna be a few more minutes, Mr. Smoke. Miss Alice and Miss Doreen really gave me a long list.
Take your time, Leroy. I'll have another beer.
Yes, sir.
Let me have another one. And pull it from a new barrel. That last one was flat.
I can't blame a man for trying to drain the barrel now, can you? Here, this one's all in the house, Mr. Jensen.
Smoke nodded his thanks and leaned against the plank. He had a bad feeling about this day, one he just couldn't shake. At the sounds of hard-ridden horses, he knew his premonition was about to turn into reality. Four Barbie riders came to a halt in an unnecessary cloud of dust, fogging everybody and everything in a brief dust storm. Smoke recognized one of the riders as a man called Smith. Smith had a shallow-made reputation as a gunslinger. Smoke knew there wasn't much to the man. He was a bully who picked his fights, fists, and guns very carefully.
Whoa, looky here. Would you boys just take a look at this little pissant with the big iron strapped on?
Smoke forced himself to stay put. He had warned Matt. He'd warned him several times. Smoke would not interfere unless the Barbie riders tried something in a bunch. As long as it was one-on-one, with both parties armed, it was an unwritten code that the fight was fair. That was the way it was. Meanwhile, in the general store section of the trading post, an entirely different batch of thoughts were passing through Leroy's mind. He heard the commotion outside and went out the back door to the wagon. He grabbed his Winchester and jacked around in the chamber of the carbine, easing down the hammer. Leroy re-entered the store, stepped to a dusty window, and pulled the Winchester to his shoulder, sighting in on one of the Barbie hands. He'd been getting something extra for Miss Alice, some candles. She was going to surprise Matthew with a birthday cake, because tomorrow was his birthday, his 14th. Leroy was going to make damn sure Matthew saw 14 one way or the other. He reckoned it was time for everybody in this section of the state to stand up to Mr. Judd Vail. And if it had to begin right here now, well, let it come. The Winchester he carried was a hand-me-down from somebody. His dad never said where he got it. It was a .44-40 that some owner had sawed the barrel off of to make into a saddle gun. It was several inches shorter than the short .44 carbine. It kicked something fierce, but when that bullet hit, it packed a wallop, especially at short range. Leroy had never shot a man before, and he didn't especially want to now. But if his friend Matt got into it with that trash from the Barbie, well, there was a first time for everything. He wished he could have had his first time with a girl before having to kill a man, but if wishes were horses, then nobody would have to walk, would they? He inched closer to the open window and settled down, waiting.
Yes, sirree. I think we ought to get us a bottle of whiskey and hold this little crap head down and pour it in him. Since he's toting a man's gun, he ought to have himself a man's drink.
Outside, Matt wisely ignored the bully's comments. He wiped the neck of his soda pop bottle on his shirt sleeve and proceeded to take a big swig.
Hey, pissant! I'm talking to you, pig farmer's boy!
I'm not deaf. You eat bacon, mister?
Huh?
I said you eat bacon.
Why, hell yes, I eat bacon. Don't everybody?
Where do you think it comes from? Grown on trees?
Are you getting sassy with me, punk?
No, sir. I was just curious. If you enjoy eating bacon, why do you make fun of people who raise the hogs?
I don't think I like you very much, Four Eyes. As a matter of fact, I know I don't like you.
That's a shame. I have nothing against you, mister.
Let's take his pants down and make him ride back home book-assed naked.
Yeah, good idea. I'll see if I can find a corn cob.
Matt set his soda pop bottle on the bench and stood up, his right hand hanging by his side.
Well now, the little pig has done gone and thought himself to be all growed up.
I'll get the corn cob, Smith.
You'll get a bullet.
You threatening me, pig boy?
Aren't you threatening me?
Why, you little turd-faced punk! I think I'll just kill you.
You have it to do?
The Barbie riders spread out, all of them grinning.
I'll take these two so-called gun slicks on the right, Matthew.
And I've got that ugly, skinny, bow-legged one on the far left in rifle sights.
I guess that leaves you and me, doesn't it, mister?
You got no call to interfere in this, Jensen. This ain't none of your concern.
It is when four of you gang up on one boy, you sorry pile of buffalo shit.
I've heard it, Jensen. You don't cuss me like some saddle bum.
Then make your play.
No way, Jensen. I ain't no match for you with guns. But I'll tear your damned head off with my fists if you got the belly for it.
I'll take you up on that, partner. Whatever your name is.
Larry Noonan.
Noonan. I know enough about you to know you're a yellow two-bit punk. You killed an unarmed sheep herder, shot him in the back. So I recall reading on the Dodger.
I still got something to settle with this loud-mouthed, sassy pig farmer's kid. You gonna interfere with that, Jensen?
No. I'm as aware as you are concerning a fair shootout between two armed men. In this case, a man and a boy. But I'll kill any of your buddies who try to step in.
You ready, kid?
Matt stepped to the edge of the porch. Smoke glanced at him. There was no fear to be seen about the boy. His face was impassive and his hands were steady. He stared at Smith through his thick spectacles.
You got about 10 seconds left to live, boy.
I have a whole lifetime ahead of me, Mr. Smith. Let's just say this is payback time for you.
Huh?
Don't you remember that time you and those other hooligans rode your horses over my mother's garden? Ruined it? We didn't eat very good that winter, Mr. Smith. It was too late to replant. I remember it very well.
Oh, you gonna bawl about it, kid?
No, sir. I'm gonna kill you. My baby sister died that winter, Mr. Smith. I won't say it was all because of what you done, even though you did kill our milk cow. She needed milk bad. You had a hand in her dying. Are you ready, Mr. Smith?
Smith, back away. I don't like this. This kid's too damn sure of himself.
I ain't backing up for no damn snot-nosed pig farmer's whelp. All right, boy. You made your brags, now do something besides talk.
After you, Mr. Smith.
Smith hesitated. Something was awfully wrong here. He'd seen any number of two-bit show-off would-be gun hands in his time. At the last minute, they always backed down. And even before they backed down, they were nervous, their voices shrill, faces shiny with the sweat of fear. But not this kid. Kid, hell. He was just a boy, barely in his teens.
My little sister suffered, Mr. Smith. I don't think I'll ever forget that.
Shut your mouth, goddamn you! Draw, you punk!
Matt waited. Waited in his worn-out, low-heeled farmer's boots. In his faded and patched old jeans and carefully mother-mended shirt. His eyes were calm behind his thick glasses. Smith just managed to clear leather. The first slug hit him in the belly, spinning him around in the dirt. The second slug struck him in the side and knocked him down to one knee. The expression on his face was one of utter disbelief that this could be happening to him. A third slug hit him in the face, entering between nose and upper lip and making one god-awful mess. The three remaining Bar V hands stood in open-mouthed shock, all of them knowing they were not nearly as fast as this fresh-faced farmer's kid standing on the porch of the store. And all of them so very, very glad they had not tried to brace him. Leroy stepped out, his short-barreled .44-40 hammer back in his hands. The barrel of the carbine was pointed straight and rock steady at the belly of a Bar V hand.
Whoa, goddammit! I'm out of it, kid!
You interfere in the fight between Mr. Smoke and Noonan, and you'll be out of it forever.
Matt quickly reloaded and holstered the peacemaker. His calm eyes, magnified behind the thick glasses, looked at the other Bar V hand.
I'm out too, kid.
Mr. Smoke?
Matt?
If you'll excuse me for a minute, I gotta go behind the building and throw up.
Go on, Matt.
I done the same thing my first man. It ain't nothing to be ashamed of.
Come on, boys! There's three of us. We can take these two.
Noonan, I think you know what you can do with that notion along with that corn cob.
Yeah, that goes double for me. You want to fight Jensen? You just go right ahead.
The Bar V hand removed his gun belt and hung it on his saddle horn. The other hand thought that was a dandy idea, and he did the same. Leroy shifted the muzzle of the .44-40 to Noonan's belly, and the man let his gun belt fall. The shopkeeper, his wife, the barkeep, and the two cattlemen walked out onto the porch to stand and stare. The body of Smith was, for the moment, being ignored. Matt walked around from behind the building, wiping his mouth with his shirt sleeve. Smoke took off his guns and laid him on the bench. He stepped off the porch and walked up to Noonan. He knocked the cowpuncher down in the dirt with one very quick and unexpected hard left hook. Noonan came to his boots, the side of his jaw beginning to bruise from the blow. He shook his head, clearing it of stars and chirping birdies, and backed up, lifting his fists. Noonan swung at Smoke. Smoke ducked the punch and busted the cowboy in the belly with a hard right. Smoke came around with another left, which connected on the man's ear. It spun him around and seriously impaired his hearing for a few moments. Just as Noonan regained his balance, Smoke stepped in. He blasted Noonan in the mouth with another straight right punch. Noonan's boots left the dirt and sat down hard on his butt, his mouth bloody. Smoke backed up. He wasn't even breathing hard, hadn't even worked up a sweat yet. Noonan wisely sat on the ground. He took another good look at the gunfighter who stood above him, his fist balled, hanging at his sides, waiting. Noonan came off the ground in a rush, a long-bladed knife in his right hand. Smoke slipped the first swing of the knife, bent down and scooped up dust from the road in his left hand. When Noonan closed with him, Smoke tossed the dirt into the man's eyes, momentarily blinded. Smoke kicked the man on the knee. Smoke hit the man twice in the face, a left and a right. The knife dropped from his hand just as Smoke's right hand clamped down on the man's fingers. Smoke bore down on the hand using all his strength. The bones in Noonan's fingers were crushed. Smoke let him drop to the dirt, unconscious. He walked to the horse trough and washed his face and hands and buckled his gun belt around his lean waist. He looked up at Leroy.
All supplies ready, Leroy?
Just about, sir.
Well, get to it, son.
Yes, sir.
Smoke looked at the now completely sober cattlemen. They were standing on the porch, faces pale under the tan, staring at the crippled Noonan. Smoke pointed first at Smith, then at Noonan.
When you men decide to take a stand in this issue, I would suggest that both of you keep this sight fresh in your minds.
The news of the gunfight between the seasoned Smith and the Nestor's kid and the short but brutally crippling fight between Smoke and Noonan spread like unchecked wildfire throughout the southeastern corner of Idaho. Noonan would never again regain the use of his right hand. The so-called bad man drifted out of the country, sucking on a bottle of laudanum to ease the pain. He would drift far away, change his name, and work the remainder of his life as a cowboy with a crippled hand, his true identity hidden forever, even to the grave. Judd Vail had been oddly silent after the shooting and the beating at the trading post. Smoke had a hunch all that would abruptly change as soon as Editor Argood left on his journey to Utah, and that was just about a week away. At Smoke's suggestion, the ranch house and the bunkhouse had been fortified against both attack and against siege. Smoke suspected the latter would be tried, with Judd Vail's marksmen in carefully placed positions attempting to pick off the defenders one by one. The remaining Box A herd had been moved to safer pastures, a huge valley with good grass and water, difficult for rustlers to get the cattle clear without being seen. On a warm, bright, late spring morning, Smoke walked around the compound inspecting the work that had been done. He couldn't think of anything else they could do, and he was growing restless. Edgy might be a better word for it. Calm it might be for now, but he knew their position was lousy, and if Judd would just do a little thinking and planning, logically instead of emotionally, and then turn his rabid dogs loose, there was no way that Smoke and the defenders could hold back a well-planned and well-executed attack against them. Smoke rounded up Cheyenne and Rusty and took them to one side.
I'll be gone for a couple of days, maybe longer. I don't like the odds, so I think I'll do something about them.
You crave some company?
Nah, this is something that's best left to one man. I'll be pulling out at dusk.
You going to tell Walt and the women what you're up to?
I'll tell Walt. If he wants to let the women in on it, that's up to him.
If anybody can pull it off, you can, son. You had the best teacher in the world in Preacher.
I'll start getting my gear together. Rusty, fix me up with a packet of food enough to last 2 days.
All right.
My horse is too well known. Put a rope on that steel dust for me, will you? He's mean as hell, but he's mountain bred and quick as lightning, and can go all day and still have bottom left.
Smoke filled up all the loops in his gun belt and filled up a bandolier, slinging that around his shoulder. He slipped another box of 44s into his saddlebags and made sure his moccasins were tucked into the leather. He would slip out of his boots and into the moccasins when it was time for the night stalking to begin. He sat down on his bunk and put a fine edge on his bowie knife. That done, he walked to a stone building behind the barn and opened the locked door with a key he had found in a cabinet in the storeroom. He had a hunch what he would find, and his hunch was correct. He filled a small sack with sticks of dynamite and caps and fuses. He might not be able to cut the head off the snake, but he was damn sure intending to tweak its tail. Smoke talked to Jamie and Matthew before he pulled out into the night.
Tell the boys to ride carefully. Keep a sharp eye out. I'm going into the lion's den, and there's no telling what Judd Vail will have his men do in retaliation after I'm through.
There used to be a lot more farmers in this area than there is now, Mr. Smoke. Women and girls has been taken and misused by Vail and his riders. Men has been tarred and feathered and horsewhipped and killed. Killed outright if they was lucky. A deputy sheriff come in here once, he just disappeared. There ain't been no more lawman come around the bear. Judd Vail is pure trash, Mr. Smoke. Trash living in a big fancy house with servants and such as that, when he can get them to stay, that is. He fancies young women all around to wait on him, and he abuses them in ways we heard that would make you sick to your stomach, so they leave as soon as they can get a way out. You can't tell us nothing about Judd Vail and what he might decide to do.
The more I hear about this man, the more I think the best thing to do would be to just go in and chop his head off.
Ain't gonna be that easy, Mr. Smoke. Not even for you. Judd ain't never alone. He's got half a dozen bodyguards with him all the time. Men that have been with him for years, my pa says.
We'll see, boys. We'll see. I might not be able to do much more than rattle the bars on his cage this time around. But by God, he will know that his territory has been violated.
Walt came out to the barn.
Clint Perkins is in the area, Smoke. Don't ask me how I know. I can't explain the feelings I get when he's close. I just know. You be careful.
Whose side is he on, Walt?
His own. He's like a goose. Wakes up in a new world every day. I always knew he was about half nuts. Now I think he's gone slap dab crazy.
I'll see you in 2 or 3 days, Walt.
Be careful, boy.
Smoke rode slowly away from the ranch and into the night. He fought shy of the roads and well-traveled trails as he worked his way toward the range of the Bar V. Editor Argood had told him that there was not one single person on the Bar V payroll that was worth the gunpowder it would take to blow their brains out. To a man, Argood said, they were bullies and trash and petty criminals, and all wanted by the law somewhere. The people in the area put up with them because Judd Vail kept them all on a tight leash. Judd had forbidden them to enter Montpelier, restricting their carousing to a few small towns and trading posts in the area around the Bar V range. All in all, a snake pit could best describe the Bar V, and that included the owner. With a tight smile on his face, Smoke thought that the next couple of days and nights should prove to be very interesting. By midnight, he was on Bar V range. He'd ride for a while, then dismount and stand listening for several minutes. He began passing bunched and sleeping cattle and slipped his rope free, knowing he would soon make contact with a night herder. If his luck held, the night herder would think him one of the Bar V riders, at least long enough for Smoke to dab a loop over the man and cause a little mischief. He rode parallel to a series of ridges for a few moments, before finding a pass that would take him to the flats on the other side. On the flats, reined up in the opening of the draw, Smoke spotted the night herder. As the night herder passed Smoke's position, the gunfighter let the loop fly and jerked the rider out of the sap. Smoke ran up and swung a hard right fist to the side of the man's jaw. He then tied him up, using cut-off sections from the Bar V rider's own rope. He gagged the man with a dirty bandana taken from the man's equally dirty neck and then squatted down beside him, waiting for him to regain consciousness. The man's eyes opened and widened as he recognized who he was looking at.
You want to live?
Mm-hmm.
You know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Smoke took out his long-bladed knife and laid the cold, sharp steel against the man's throat.
I've got a good notion to cut your throat and just have done with it. Second thought, I think I'll strip you and tie you between two steers and then stampede the herd unless you agree to ride out and never show your face in this part of the state again.
Smoke very slowly moved the knife point, just scraping the man's unshaven jaw. Barvee Nightherder looked like he was developing the first stages of a heart attack. With one flick of his wrist, Smoke cut the gag from the man's mouth.
Oh, Lord God Almighty.
Smoke grabbed him by the hair and jerked his head back, exposing the softness of throat. He laid the blade against the man's skin, and the sharp odor of urine filled the night.
If I see you again, I'll kill you.
Mr. Jensen, if you wish to cut me loose, I'll be two counties away coming to dawn.
Smoke cut his bonds and stood up.
Now ride. Ride like you've never ridden before. Forget about your war bag back at the bunkhouse. Just get clear of this area.
I'm gone. I'm gone.
Cowboy staggered to his boots and ran to his horse and swung into the saddle, wet drawers and all, and he was gone into the night, heading west. Smoke had not disarmed the cowboy, but the man made no moves toward his six-gun. Back in the saddle, Smoke guided the steel dust out to the edge of the herd and began making the night herder's rounds, working in a slow, rough circle. He soon spotted another night rider.